everyone, and thanks for coming not too early in the morning for the second day, and not too many bleary eyes, which is good. We've got a great session now, that I've got to look back on, unlocking the commercial potential of the women's game. I think it's a new way of looking at women's football, and I'm really pleased to invite Shelley Alexander from the BBC, who's going to come and chair this session. So I hope you enjoy it.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Ben. I'm going to invite our illustrious guests up in a moment, but I'd just like to tell you one stat from the Women's World Cup coverage that we did on BBC television, and that's 12.6 million people watched the Women's World Cup. 67% of those were men and 33% were women, and they absolutely all loved it. Our audience appreciation figures were terrific. Kelly Simmons, who's head of women's football at the FA, said it was a watershed moment for women's football in terms of the commercialisation of the game. But we're going to, with our guest today, explore exactly what that means and whether they've actually noticed that it is. So I'd like to invite onto the stage our lionesses, our wonderful lionesses who won bronze beating Germany at the World Cup. So can I invite Enya Luko, Chelsea and England, please, and Lucy Bronze, Manchester City in England. And joining us today as well, we have Gavin Makel, who's head of women's football at Manchester City. Gavin, if you'd like to come up. And Joe Tung, who's the CEO of Tongue Tied Media. Lovely. Yeah, that's lovely. Gavin, would you like to sit? Lovely. So, Enny, let's start with you first. Congratulations.
Thank
I know
you.
I said it to you before. And, of course, Enny was woman of the match at the FA Cup final when Chelsea beat Notts County. And again, on BBC television, we peaked at 1.99 million. 2 years ago, the peak was 0.7 million, which again just shows you the growth of the game and the desire of the audience to watch what is becoming a very exciting sport. So, Enny, what have you noticed since you've come back from your triumph in Canada?
Well, I think for me, I've noticed the amount of appreciation just from the general public. I've noticed the amount of coverage that there was. Everyone I speak to seems to have seen one game or another in the World Cup, and are fans of women's football more so than ever before. I think, you know, whether you're talking to a 7-year-old girl, a 15-year-old boy, a university student, someone who, you know, goes to Man United every week, you know, there's a vast variety of people now that are watching women's football. So that for me has been the real sort of eye-opener coming back from the World Cup. But there's a lot of people who know who we are as players, but also, you know about the England team, know the fixtures, want to know more, want to come to games. So I think it's in a really great place in that sense, because I think that's what women's football has always wanted, you know, that sort of amount of exposure to different kinds of people.
And how has that translated into commercial approaches to you?
Well, I think certainly, you know, when you talk to brands, there is a level of interest now because the viewing figures are there. You know, there's a lot of different kinds of fans, as I've said. But I think there is still, still a way to go in terms of brands actually sort of catching up with the level of interest, because I think the argument has always been in the past that, well, there's not enough people watching the game, there's not enough ones on seats, it's not on TV. Well, now that's kind of, that argument's been put to bed. Now you've got millions and millions of people watching the women's game, and different kinds of people watching the women's game. So, you know, for me, I think it'll be interesting to see brands actually catch up, because women's football's not going to go away. So, you know, if you're going to get on the bandwagon, it's the time to get on it. So for me personally, I think, you know, I've seen, you know, I've done a lot of sort of corporate events, which is an indication that a lot of the big brands are interested in women and, you know, women's sport and the stories of a female footballer like myself. But, you know, commercially, I still think, you know, a lot of brands can, you know, get behind it, and it's certainly the right time to do it.
We mentioned the FA Cup, and of course SSE came in just before the FA Cup, and they got a lot of brand awareness from the television, didn't they, and from online and from radio.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't know who SSE were before the FA Cup, and all of a sudden those questions, you start asking those questions, who are SSE? Wow, you know, they're getting behind the Women's FA Cup. You know, obviously we won it, so, you know, it was nice to sort of, you know, be part of that experience, you know, to find out that they're a huge, you know, energy company who are interested in the women's game, which is again another example of the kinds of companies now that are coming on board who want to be involved in women's sport, who want to, you know, be behind the stories of the players, who want to be the, you know, the title sponsor of a Women's FA Cup, which was extra special this year because it was at Wembley and it was a whole, you know, it was a whole event. So, you know, I certainly would like to see brands like SSC, you know, continue to come on board. And, you know, hats off to them for sort of taking the leap of faith, really, and doing it. Because it does work that, you know, clearly their brand awareness has increased with SSC. And I'm sure that will be the case for many other brands.
Thank you. Turn to Lucy now. And Lucy, I have to congratulate you on your goals in the World Cup. They just lifted us as a nation. They were wonderful. And of course, you got into the team of the tournament as well. So congratulations on that. What have been your sort of, what's happened to you since you've come home from Canada?
I'd say myself probably more than like if any, I think I was probably not known as much before the World Cup, and I think that's probably taken me by a big surprise when coming back, is people now know my name, which I didn't think they did before, and I don't think they actually did. And you know, you've got people now who want to talk to you, who want to be part and just know more things about you, which before I honestly couldn't tell you that many people who recognise me even in a football kit at a football match, whereas now you're getting noticed on the street, you know, it's social media, people at the games, it's everywhere. And I think that's, for me personally, that's something that I've really been aware of coming back from the World Cup.
Mm-hmm. And commercially, have you had some approaches? You don't have to give us any secrets, but...
Yeah, no, definitely. I think a lot of the girls have now from the World Cup, and you can see why, because there's so many people watching it. And personally, I have had a few commercial things coming up and charity events, a lot of things like this where, you know, they want to get women's football, women's sport involved, and obviously we're a good bunch of people to use with because of how successful we were at the World Cup, and, you know, people love football in England as well anyway, so to have women now as well as, you know, all the guys who do it is a positive for all those companies, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it was your goals at the World Cup, but you're not a renowned goal scorer, are you?
No, I'm a defender, you know. Yeah. I think I only had 2 England goals before that entire tournament, so to get another 2 in a couple of games was a bit of a surprise for me, let alone everyone else. But, I mean, goals aren't a big deal for me. I just wanted the team to win, and we did.
Now, of course, you play for Manchester City, and they're a very interesting case in how, as a club, they decided not just to have a women's team, but to actually embrace it and make it just part of the club. So it's one badge, one team, whether you're male or female.
Yeah, I think that was the whole idea of Manchester City, and that's what they've done really well. And they want to be the stepping stone in women's football. And, you know, we're not just doing it to make our club better. We want the women's game better, because, you know, if we have a stadium, what's to say the likes of Chelsea and Arsenal now, I'm sure they want a stadium, and I'm sure that'll happen in the future now. And Man City are kind of just, you know, showing the other teams that it's, you know, anyone's capable of doing it, and it can happen in women's football. So although we are, you know, we're at the forefront of women's football in England right now in terms of the way the club engulfs the women's team, I guess, I think we want it to happen with everyone, and I think you're starting to see that happen now with Chelsea especially. I would say it was a big team who's doing that. I know Arsenal, the Liverpools, you know, the big teams in the men's side are now investing in women's football because they've seen what it's done in Manchester now, where, you know, we've got the record for the attendance in the league, and it's not a coincidence that we happen to have our own stadium for that to be capable of happening.
Absolutely. And I know at the end of last WSL season, Chelsea, who were, sorry to remind any about this, but they were tipped to win, and they played you, didn't they? And you beat them. And Emma Hayes is the Chelsea manager, the only woman coach in the WSL one. And she told me at a Kick It Out Racial Game event that she actually went in after the season finished to see Bruce Buck, at Chelsea and said to him, look what Manchester City have got. It's amazing how they've embraced the women's game and the facilities and the support staff. If you give me that, and if you give me money so my players can be full-time, I will win you the title. How many points are you clear, any this season?
Well, currently 5, I think.
5.
So, City have a game in hand.
Got a game in hand. So
let's, you know, we're not getting too ahead of ourselves. It's not over till it's over.
And that's the great thing about women's football. It's very, very competitive, very competitive. So, Gavin, congratulations on what you've done at Manchester City. So, what have you noticed since the World Cup in terms of approaches to Manchester City commercially?
I think it's been more in terms of the profile of the game more than anything. I think there's still, in terms when you're talking to brands, they still don't quite know how to position it, the women's game. Obviously, international and the World Cups are different. It's a different level because you are speaking to a global audience a lot more, and it's a lot easier to do that, obviously, with BBC as well being broadcast. So I think there's more interest. There's definitely more interest, and we are seeing people coming to us and wanting to find out a little bit more, not necessarily saying we want to invest, definitely, but we want to find out a little bit more and how that fits with our brand. I mean, Nissan are one of our sponsors at Manchester City, and they're very, very passionate about women's sport and women's football with that as well. And, you know, it fits for them because over 55% of their purchases are female. So, but we have to keep on reminding ourselves as well that it's not just, just because it's the women's game, it's not women that are watching it. There's around 64% of attendees at our games who are male. And I think that's probably the same when it comes to TV audience
as well. That's right, 67% who watch the World Cup were male.
So I think it's about where you position the women's game. But what it does have is it has enormous potential in the sense that it opens up to an audience that people have never really tapped into previously before. And also it's an unsaturated market for other brands to get involved in a sport where it is becoming, as Annie said, it's not going away. It's becoming a lot more high profile because of the back of the World Cup. And the challenge for the likes of us and Chelsea and all the other clubs is to keep that momentum going, because it's easy to have these conversations straight off the back of something as successful as the World Cup. You'd like to be thinking that in 3-4 months' time, when we start the new season next year, that there's still that interest going, because that's the biggest challenge, and that's where we'll really see the impact from the World Cup really across the board.
But what was wonderful after the World Cup, the first WSL game that you had queues around the block, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. Over the bridge that connects the CFA and the Etihad Stadium, there was queues, which was fantastic to see. I mean, the numbers are still, you know, for the women's game in this country, they're great, but they're still relatively small as well, and we need to still grow that. But we had 600 people just walking up on the day, which was fantastic. I mean, the average, just the people that might not be aware, the average attendance in the league last year was just under 1,000. So for that game, we had 2,104, I think it was. So it is relatively small, but it's where we're going next, and it shows that there is an appetite, and using players like Lucy and like Annie, you know, in terms of using those players as the assets for clubs, because of what they're doing is showing that they're role models for young girls who actually want to make a career in the game and see that actually this is a tangible career pathway for me now, whereas before it didn't exist.
And one of the great things about the Lionesses and about WSL players is that they're very approachable, and that I know that you all stay behind after games to sign. And I think, Lucy, when you came on the Women's Football Show, which we do also on the BBC, which has doubled its audience since the World Cup, so thank you. I know you showed me the picture of the queues of you when you were signing. And that's a great thing that Man City's encouraged you to do.
Yeah, well, at Man City, they've clocked on to the fact that, you know, that's what makes the women's game so special, is how we can interact with the fans so well. And we want to, you know, we want to thank the fans for coming, because they're coming to watch us, and it's a great feeling. So at Manchester City, you know, we stay after on purpose. We have a fan zone.
Autograph alley.
Very so, American. You know,
everyone, you know, all the players, we're not made to go there. You know, we have a choice, but the majority of our players choose to go down and talk to the fans for an extra hour or two and take pictures and autographs, which is something I don't think you would ever see in the men's game. because obviously they do have hundreds and thousands of fans, and it's a lot to expect from them. But for us, we want to do that, and we want the fans to be part of it, and that kind of makes the whole experience a little bit better, I suppose, than what you get at the men's game. And you actually get to meet, you know, these professional athletes, these footballers who you've seen on TV, and now you get to talk to them in real life. So I think it makes it a little bit more special.
Okay, thank you. Joe, let's talk now about, you're actually Eni's agent. So in terms of approaches to you, or what's the sort of zeitgeist that you've noticed since the World Cup?
So the week after the World Cup, it was insane. The first few weeks after the World Cup, it was insane. And it has continued to be insane. But weirdly for Eni, it actually sort of, it started a couple of years ago. And then when Eni was the first female pundit on Match of the Day too. And so that was last October. And actually that was more of a jump up in terms of commercial activity. Because I think brands cottoned onto the fact that, goodness, a woman can speak about the men's game on a par with the men. So Eni was then seen as a BBC pundit or a pundit. And I think so, actually, I saw a bigger increase with commercialisation since last October than since the World Cup. And not to burst the bubble, but to kind of pick up on what Gavin said. After the World Cup, I was inundated with appearances and can Eni do this and can she do this and can she do this interview? And there was quite a lot of corporate approaches. And, they'd offer a fee, but I mainly represent male footballers, so I'm used to the fees that commercial organisations will pay for professional male footballers. So there was one company who phoned and said, we'd like Eni to do this, blah, blah, blah. Went through the spiel and I said, OK, what's the fee? And they went, we don't really have a fee, but, you know, it'd be great profile for her and we can cover expenses. And I was like, she's been on Match of the Day in front of 8 million people and then she's just played in a World Cup in front of, 12.6 million people. Genuinely, I really want to increase the profile of the women's game, but she's not doing a corporate with a commercial company for profile. And then they were like, oh, yeah, you're right. And I said, would you phone me after one of my male internationals came back from winning a bronze medal, coming third, beating Germany in the World Cup, and saying, oh, we'd just like them to turn up, but we'll cover their expenses. And he was like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I'll come back to you. And obviously they came back and found a fee. And I sort of feel, you know, I don't want to put my bad agent hat on, and it's not about the money, but it's kind of, come on, like, be reasonable. And kind of as gatekeepers, and I'll call myself a gatekeeper here, we have to have a respect for the level of the game that it's now got to. And if we don't demand respect from commercial organisations, then no one else will. So while I feel the interest is there, I really do, there's huge interest. I mean, you know, you walk through somewhere and you get stopped now, people recognise you, young people are like, oh my God, you work with Eni, this is amazing, which is great, and especially for young women. However, I do feel there's this kind of gap where commercial organisations, corporate organisations, haven't quite cottoned on to the fact that these women are really visual and they're really, really, really good role models and they're accessible, which a lot of the male footballers I represent aren't seen so. And, you know, football clubs are far more willing to give access. You know, Chelsea are unbelievable to work with in terms of wanting Eni to do stuff. And I know Man City are exactly the same. They're, for agents, they are fantastic to work with because they want to get the game out there and the message out there as much as we do.
At the World Cup, if some of you remember when Jodie Taylor had a post-match interview, she gave this interview and it was just emotional. I know lots of men told me that they cried at it. And Colin Murray actually tweeted and said, that's what I want from my England footballers, whether they're male or football. I want them to show passion. I want them to show that they care. And I think that's a real selling point for our Lionesses, isn't it?
Absolutely. And Colin's actually one of my clients, so thank you for mentioning him. And Colin was really, like, he was someone who was really taken with, and, you know, he knew I looked after Eni and I was always banging on, why don't you come down to a game, come down to a game, yeah. Anyway, he was quite caught up in the World Cup and he has a show on TalkSport every day and was talking a lot about the World Cup. And then immediately after the World Cup, he went, can I come to a game? And then, you know, since he's written his column about it, and I think he just said, they want it. They want it as much as I want it. And whether our male football, you know, as I said, I work with the men and I do believe they do still care, but I think you were just maybe a lot more free with your emotions, or maybe you weren't as media trained out of it. You were just kind of, this is amazing for us too, so we're just going to tell you all how we feel. And I think the nation kind of caught on to that. And that's an amazing product for a commercial brand to, you know, passion. If when you're selling a product, all you need is passion. And these ladies epitomise that.
Absolutely. Yeah, Annie, would you like to?
Yeah, I was just going to touch on that and say that actually I think because our backgrounds are different as, you know, as female footballers, you know, I have a brother in the game who, you know, his story is completely different to mine. You know, Shawnee, who plays for Hull, you know, pretty much from 15 years of age, he's been in the, you know, been in the academy and he's sort of risen through the ranks. Whereas for me, it's been a lot more of a winding road. You know, I went to university, did law, you know, had a lot of setbacks, went to America, you know, the league collapse, all that sort of stuff. So we have very powerful stories, you know, as females. You know, it's, it, you know, there's so many different stories within the team that's inspirational. You know, a lot of our players have had, you know, parents die and, you know, tribulations, some have been homeless. And I think for brands, that stuff is gold dust. You know, by way of example, Continental Tires, you know, did a huge campaign before the World Cup about our stories. And it was, you know, I don't know, 2-minute sort of video, but it went viral and people really connected with it because it was just heartfelt stuff. It wasn't sort of commercial, you know, all glitz and glamour. It was stories, inspirational stories. These girls are going to the World Cup and are going to fight for that badge. And I think that is another aspect of women's football that perhaps, you know, is something that is different to the men's game. I think, you know, like Joe said, the male players are very media trained, they're very guarded, whereas in women's football we do have stories that people can relate to, in the same way, you know, you watch X Factor and people relate to a lot of the stories, you know, from normal people. I think it's very similar in that sense.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because when I talk to commercial brands, sometimes they say to me, oh, but women's football, it's still a minority sport. What would you say to them about that? And just give you another stat as well. I mentioned that 12.6 million people who watched the Women's World Cup. That was more than watched the Open Golf Championship last year. Now, if you think about men's golf and you think about the sponsors, the very high-end brands that come to men's golf, well, actually, on the BBC, more people wanted to watch our Lionesses than they wanted to watch the men's golf. So, anyway, just to give you that, to sort of say, you know.
I think It can't really, technically, it cannot be really considered a minority sport because of the level of viewing figures that we have. It's a professional sport. You know, myself and Lucy are both professional players. You know, Manchester City is a professional outfit, you know, with commercial sponsors, same as Chelsea, same as Arsenal, same as Liverpool. You know, there are some teams that are still sort of on the cusp of semi-pro professional, but ultimately it's a women's professional league, and I think that is why we are doing so well, that, you know, it's had a positive knock-on effect for the national team. So I can't really see how it can be technically seen as a minority sport, but perhaps again, that's, you know, going back to what Gavin said, it's what people's perceptions are, in terms of it, you know, there's always this constant reference to men's football, which is huge. It's a beast. It's a monster. So I think maybe people's perceptions are still that it's a minority sport in comparison. But actually, when you look at the technical figures, it's the fastest growing sport, you know, in the world, I suppose.
Yeah, just on that, Shelley. I mean, you've got 30 million plus girls and women that are playing football worldwide. You know, it's the third most participated sport in this country out of men and women, and that's men's football, men's cricket, and then women's football. It's actually hot on the heels of taking that number two spot as well. So to say it's a minority sport, I think that is exactly, it's that whole perception piece that people just think that it's, you know, a few people playing in the park almost. And we do, there's a virtuous circle here, really, you know, in terms of once you professionalise the game, which, you know, this club's doing now, that's going to have an effect on the players in terms of the standard of the game. That's going to increase, which is going to make it a lot more appealing to fans to want to come and watch it, which is going to increase attendance, which is ultimately is what commercial sponsors want to see as well, and broadcasters as well. So there's a virtuous circle here. So I think that the step that clubs such as ours and Chelsea and the others are taking, that's the way that it's got to go going forward, really. And we hope that, you know, there's more clubs in the future that'll come off the back of that, because we all want the same for it. We all want to grow it. And we've got a great opportunity now off the back of the World Cup and having players such as these girls on stage to be able to push it as far as it can go.
Can I just come in on that, Shelley? I think a lot of people who call it a minority sport, it's just a lazy brand because they haven't actually watched the game. So a lot of the guys that I work with would say, oh, women's football, minority sports. They hadn't actually seen the game. And until the World Cup, which was on network TV, thank goodness, they didn't realise the standard of the game. So when they watched how technically good they were and actually what a competitive game it was, I mean, not even, you know, look outside the England games in the World Cup. There were some really great competitive games that men enjoyed watching. Like you said, 67% of the audience were male. And I think until a lot of the men watched it, they didn't realise. And, you know, look at Tony Duggan, who won goal of the season at Man City last season, with all the men's goals as well. So Tony Duggan from Manchester City Women won goal of the season, and that just shows you how far we come. That's not a minority sport.
And that was a fan vote as well.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
So Lucy, when you came on the Women's Football Show, just picking up on that theme about the standard, we did a little slow-motion montage of some of your skill during the World Cup. And I remember I was in the VT edit suite with a young work experience lad, and he was going, oh, my God, oh, my God. You know, because he just couldn't believe the skill level that you had. And are you noticing now that people... And actually, just to say that what was great is that the first game coming back after the World Cup, you must have been all exhausted, but the standard on that Sunday when you were all playing was incredible. Are you getting people sort of talking to you about your skill? And
yeah, definitely. I think that's what people have been most surprised about, I guess, is that they must have had this vision in their head already of women's football being, you know, some middle-aged women, like you said, kicking about in a park, or, you know, they don't really do much, not particularly that fit, and people kind of have that perception, and I think they have to come and see it to believe it, and I think that's maybe where the problems lie in the past, is that they've not seen it to be able to believe it. So as much as we talk about it in media, commercially, they're not seeing the actual game, and they're not seeing the skill levels, and then that's probably where it's came in now, is that the World Cup was broadcasted on the BBC. People can see it. You know, that's... BBC is accessible for most people if you have a TV, you know. So you get that. People are able to see it, and people then believe it, and then people want to come and watch more. And I think that's maybe where the problem lies in the past, was that it wasn't as accessible to see for as many people. You would only get a couple hundred people come to a game, and how are they going to persuade other people to come? You know, they can't, because it's word of mouth, whereas really we need it on the TV. We need it to be seen to be able to believe it. I think that's kind of how we've made that stepping stone now.
And, of course, we have to pay credit to BT Sport as well, because they show live WSL matches, but they're also a sponsor in their own right. So I think it's important to say that as well.
Yeah, I think that's was a huge one with the women's game, is that they actually got on the bandwagon before it was a bandwagon, I suppose, you know. So they've kind of gotten in the forefront with that, you know. Coming off the back of the World Cup, all these companies now want a piece of it, and it's like BT are kind of sitting there smug, I guess, saying, well, we knew this was going to happen. And I think anyone involved in the women's game knew that this was going to happen. It was just a matter of when. And I think BT kind of clocked onto that, as the BBC did. And now, you know, they're getting their money's worth, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And I know during the World Cup, one of my producers in Canada, he actually rang me and he said, Shelley, he said, Sky Sports, they're getting as much access as we are, and we're the rights holders. Do something about it. So I had a think, and I thought to myself, actually, it's really good for the women's game that Sky are interested. And we know what a big brand Sky is, and we know their reach and their audience. And so I didn't say anything, because I think it's really important that we work together for the women's game. I'll let you know, though, that when I spoke to Andy Cairns from Sky a couple of weeks later, we had the Netball World Cup coming up in Australia, which Sky were the rights holder. So I just had a little whisper in his ear and said, you know, I scratched your back, so you do mine. And that's what we have to do for the good of women's sport, I think.
But on that, we were talking about this earlier. I don't know if you know the answer or if there's anyone from Sky here, but the Women's Champions League starts October. So Chelsea have just drawn Celtic City, and Celtic are managed...
Glasgow City,
who are managed by Scott Booth, who's an ex-Scottish pro international, I think.
Yeah, Borussia Dortmund, Aberdeen,
blah, blah, blah. But no one's picked the game up. Now, for me, I think this is... you know, it's almost illegal. I can't understand. It's Champions League. So if I was Sky, I don't know if anyone from Sky is here, I'd be jumping on that, because BT, like you say, BT is sitting there happy as. We're at this from the beginning. BBC have sat there from the beginning. We've been covering this. We're all over this. Sky aren't in on the act yet. So if you are here from Sky, or if anyone's listening from Sky, if I were you, I'd be tapping up somebody for the Champions League rights immediately, or BT, or, I mean, BBC are very poor at the moment, so probably can't afford it. But someone should be jumping on that, because there's so many stories in the Champions League already.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you've got the answer.
No, it's a great story, isn't it? So you've got Scotland against Emma Hayes, haven't you? It's terrific. And I think last year, didn't Arsenal play Glasgow City as well, which was terrific. And we did that on radio. But again, it'd be great for someone like Sky to come in and take the pictures. Definitely.
Well, I think that's the future, really. I think when you look at the men's game and you look at sort of the Premier League and how that commercialised the men's game, you know, it's literally war for TV rights in the men's game. You know, the figures that we talk about, billions that are coming into the men's game in terms of TV rights. And, you know, for the clubs that can't attract the you know, Cristiano Ronaldo's, they can still operate at a certain level because of TV rights. Now, I think the next step for women's football is, you know, bidding between Sky and BT for, you know, women's football, because it is, you know, it is a new sport, it is something that people are watching. And, you know, Sky clearly have, you know, are covering a lot of women's sport. You've got this, you know, Sky Sports Women's Show. And, you know, now women's football fans have a lot of options in terms of what they watch. So, you know, you can watch BBC for the Women's Football Show, you can watch Sky Sports Women on a morning, BT Sport for a game. So I think that certainly will help the commercialisation of the game when actually there's more TV money coming into the sport, and that actually trickles down to the teams like, you know, Bristol and Birmingham, for instance, in our league, who don't have the huge support of the men's teams, but actually the TV money helps them, you know, breed young players, helps the grassroots game.
So Gavin, where do you think women's football will be in 5 years?
I think if you'd asked that question 5 years ago and then look to where the game is now, I think you would probably say we've more or less, we've surpassed where we thought it would potentially have been then. I think in 5 years, it's got an exciting time. I mean, 2017 is the end of the WSL licence. So post-2017, there's still a lot of decisions to be made what the game looks like, and that's how the league's structured, to any point where it's broadcast. I mean, for me, there's an argument for you guys to get involved a lot more, because you have a bigger far reach in terms of audience figures than anyone else in this country. So to be able to still grow a product that's growing, to have it on free-to-air TV, I think for me it would be the catalyst, really, because then you straight away you're talking millions and millions of people that who can watch it. Where it can go, I think it needs to every club to be professional. I think that's paramount. I think it's absolutely paramount. It's an interesting one, because for me as well, it's about opportunity. It's about giving women and girls an opportunity. And, you know, the way I see it is that we've all got women and girls in our life, who, you know, whether that's your wife, your girlfriend, your sister, your niece, and we should all want what's best for them. And I think, you know, people like Annie and Lucy, and you touched on it before about the stories that they've got, they've been denied that previously. And I think that as long as we can start giving young girls an opportunity to be able to become professional players, and we've got to get more people playing it, we've got to get more girls playing the sport as well, so that we can actually fit a bigger talent pool. Because in this country at the moment, we're only 8 clubs in WSL1, going to 9 next year. There's probably not a massive talent pool that you can stretch to a 20-strong team. And that's the reality. And I think in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, maybe you're talking a 24-strong team, because I'm sure that these players would want that, really, because, you know, you're facing up against
the season's hard enough, Gavin.
But I think we'd all want a stronger league in that sense. But the league is becoming a lot more competitive over the last couple of years, and I think there's a lot more interest from other European associations and other European leagues, where France and Germany, Sweden have historically been, you know, the forefronts of the women's game, and the US, of course, they're starting to look at what we're we're doing over here, and going, oh, right, that's quite interesting. But ultimately, we've got to get more sponsorship into the sport. We've got to get more clubs putting a lot more resource and support into it and actually professionalise it. And that way, you'll only see it grow. And it's that virtuous circle, what I was talking about before. But there's a lot of moving variables there. But you're completely right, Shelley. We've all got to work together, and you know, and that's clubs as well. So I speak to Adrian at Chelsea on a regular basis, and you know, we share the same thoughts, we share the same objectives, and his objective for Chelsea Ladies is the same objectives as mine for Manchester City Women. We want to be the biggest women's team in the world, and you know, and it'll be competitive and it'll be interesting over the next 5 years. But you need rivalry in sport as well. You need that, because that's what interests viewers and spectators and commercial partners as well.
And I'm glad you mentioned Europe, because, of course, you are the best team in Europe. Of course, the Lionesses, aren't you?
Yeah.
After beating Germany. And you start, Lucy, your European qualifying campaign later this month, September the 21st in Estonia. Yeah, so the expectation, you'd never had that before, did you? Does that put pressure on you?
To say we never had expectation before, I wouldn't completely agree with. Being an English team, whether that's women or men, I think football in England is so big that you have an expectation, and I think we've kind of had the expectation of what the same the men's has, even though people haven't necessarily watched our games. We've still always had that expectation of, well, we're English, we need to do well because we play football and that's our nation's sport. So I think we've kind of had that. You might have said that we've surpassed our expectation at the World Cup, possibly, and maybe we have expectation for the Euros off of media, off of people outside it, but it's nothing that we don't have for ourselves anyway. And me personally, I always have that expectation that we're going to win, we want to win, and I'm sure in my opinion, we have the players to win. And that's the way that English football's going right now, is that I think it's probably the fastest growing nation in the world at the minute because of the Premier League teams with the men being able to feed into the women's teams, and you know, that kind of circle. I think we've got the biggest growth and we are capable of doing anything in this country, really, with that.
So you're going to win the Euros?
Yep.
I love that confidence. Should we have some questions from the audience now, just in the last 5 minutes or so? Are there any questions from the audience? We've got a mic here, I think. Oh, we have. Thank you.
Hi, more of a comment than a question. I just think the key to kind of growing the sport and capitalizing on that momentum from the World Cup is getting the personalities out there, getting, you know, you mentioned the personal touch points with the fans and that connection. And it's more stories around the game as opposed to the actual game itself. People can watch football, all sorts of football, men's, women's, youth, all over the place. So they can watch the games anywhere, but getting that story and those player personalities, creating cool, engaging content around them, that's going to get the media partners to want to talk about these players. If the clubs can put together some cool content or some interesting stories, the media is going to want to share it. They're going to learn more about the players. People are going to want to follow up and learn more about each and every Lucy and all the other players that were successful in the World Cup. At Mondo Goal, we did the first fantasy football contest for women's soccer. We had a 10,000-pound competition. Thousands of people were playing. They loved it. And like Lucy mentioned, not the most popular player at the start of the tournament. By the end, it was Carly Lloyd and Lucy Bronze that were the most popular picked players. So people were looking for information. They want to consume women's football. They want to learn more about it. But you guys got to kind of get it out there for them and kind of create some cool stories.
Do you want to pick up that idea?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, you know, certainly for the women's game, I think the digital world has really helped. I think where sort of TV's maybe been a bit slow to catch on, we've really capitalised on social media, on, you know, online to really engage fans. And I think what you were saying in terms of different digital content, I think Man City are excellent at it. You know, I think you guys are really good at sort of doing the, you know, the daily videos and you know, the sort of behind the scenes stuff that fans want to see ultimately. You know, fans want to see what, you know, Lucy looks like in the change room, you know, before a game. It might sound, well, maybe not that, but
steady.
But do you know what I mean? I think it's about, you know, the behind the scenes stuff, the content that actually people ordinarily don't have access to, particularly in the men's game. So I think certainly the women's teams can get better at that. I think Chelsea, for instance, you know, we could have a lot more digital content that the fans can engage with a lot more. But I think that's all to come. But the digital platform is really, really important, I think, for women's football.
Yeah, go on.
Sorry, I was just going to go on that as well. There is quite a lot of content out there, but since the World Cup, there's been obviously a lot of media interest, whether that's TV, radio, or print media. There is a lot out there, but you're always fighting against other things as well. You're always fighting to get it seen, get it shown. I mean, at our club, and as Andy says, we do have a whole host of digital content on our website, on our Facebook, social media, etc., YouTube. We've got over 4 million followers on our Facebook channel, just for the women's team, which is more than around 12 men's Premier League clubs. So it is out there, and it shows that there is an interest. But you are right in some ways about creating content, but as I say, it is in the domain. It's just about people trying to get people understanding where to find it, where they can access the players, where can they access information on where you're playing next, how you can watch games. Because the amount of emails that we get through with, why is the game not being streamed in America? I think, well, if only, you know, that's not something that we can necessarily affect just yet. But there is the interest there. Then we've just got to keep on creating and keep on knocking on that door.
Just to say quickly, you have internal battles with that as well. So Annie's got a column on BBC Sport, on the BBC Sport website. And I know, you know, Shelley's women's lead, women's editor at the BBC. So Shelley's always fighting the battle to get, you know, to get something on BBC Sport homepage is immense because it goes to 90 million people around the world. So that's what you want. So every week, obviously, I want Annie's column on the front page of the BBC Sport website. So you call the editor and you're like, well, where's the column? Where do I get it? And he's like, you've got to understand, I'm fighting a battle with, I don't know, somebody's press conference about, or Brendan Rodgers has said this, and, you know, they're fighting internally. So while we're fighting to get the content and saying, you know, we're giving you this content, there are internal battles that I'm sure Gavin has at Man City and Shelley has at the BBC. For them, it's, you know, it's kind of, we don't want to keep fighting this battle. Just call it a standard, even with BBC bulletins. So I'm ex-BBC, and we got a memo, maybe a year ago, and it was, the idea is on a Women's Super League day, you've got to do the Women's Super League results in your bulletin. But on a Sunday, you get 1 minute. At the top of the hour, you get 1 minute to do your sports bulletin. So I've got a 12 o'clock, 12 o'clock kickoff, a 2 o'clock kickoff, a 4 o'clock kickoff, and 4 Women's Super League games with your editorial hat on. Where are you gonna fit that in? So it is a constant battle, but it is levelling out.
Yeah, and I don't actually agree with that we should have to put things in. I think they should be there on merit. And that's why I disagree with you a little bit, because I think the football is all. Everything starts with the football, and everything starts with the performance and the wonderful competitive nature of the Women's Super League. And if it's a great game, then it's a story, and it should be in the running order. And I think that's really important. Did you want to say something, Lucy?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, obviously everyone watch football everywhere, and you're right, you know, football is football, but at the same time, we don't want to get caught up in, say, for the World Cup, for example, someone like Farrah Williams, who, in my eyes, is one of the best technical players in England, yet I read articles, not saying it's a bad thing, or even on the TV, when Farrah Williams is mentioned in the game, it's mentioned as, well, Farrah Williams was once homeless, and they start telling her life story during a football match, whereas really we should be focusing on the fact that Farrah Williams has an amazing right foot, an amazing left foot. She can, you know, hit a ball on a penny. You know, it should be things like this as well. So I think, although we do have, you know, these great stories that we do want to tell, and we do want media and those kind of things, and we are accessible as athletes, we ultimately are athletes in the first place, and that is what we want to be known for in the first place and in the first right. So as much as, you know, that is brilliant and that we have that, but like you said, is that people are surprised at our skill levels, and that is ultimately what we want, is the football first. But obviously the stories come with that, but I do think there's kind of a balance that's yet to be found in the right way, I guess, is that focus on the right things at the right time in the right places. And that's obviously, you know, things are getting worked through at the minute, but it's something that is there. For me, I feel really strongly about that, and it is something that's getting better, but understand your point and I agree with it, but I see the other side to it as well.
Well, wonderful way to finish. Supreme technical athletes and entertainers as well. Thank you very much to Lucy and Ennie and Joe and Gavin. Thank you.